I won't ever forget. A car approaches on the side of the road, and we scoot off into the ditch until it passes. It whips into a stone driveway of a nearby house, and a man in a black leather jacket jumps out. He pounds on the front door, yelling for whoever is inside to open up. "Jesus, what time is it?" I ask Six. Six moves towards the man in the house, my hand still in hers. "Does it matter?" As we creep within 10 feet of him, the smell of alcohol hits me. He stops pounding his fist against the door to yell,
"You better goddamn open this door, Charlene, or you don't want to know what I'm gonna do."
Six sees the revolver in his waistband the same time I do, and she squeezes my hand.
"Screw this guy," Six whispers.
He pounds again and again until the lights in the front window turn on. Then, through the door, a woman shouts,
"Get out of here! Just get out of here, Tim!"
"Open the door right now," he yells back. "Or else, Charlene! Or else, you hear me?"
We're within touching distance of him. I can see the faded tattoo below his left ear as a bald eagle holding a snake in its talons. She yells back, her voice shakier than before.
"Just leave me alone, Tim! Why are you here? Why won't you just leave me alone?"
He pounds and yells even harder. I'm about to put him in a chokehold, squeeze that bald eagle and snake right off his neck, when I see the gun slowly crawl up his lower back until it floats away from him in Six's invisible hand. She puts the barrel of the gun up against the back of the man's head and buries it in his brown hair. She cocks the hammer with a loud click. The man stops pounding on the door. He stops breathing, too. Six pushes the gun even harder into his skull, and then she pushes it stiffly to the right, spinning the man around. The sight of the floating gun in front of his face makes him go white. He blinks and shakes his head violently, expecting to wake up in his bed or in the back alley of whatever bar he came from. Six moves the gun side to side, and I wait for her to say something, to really spook the hell out of him. But instead, she suddenly turns the gun towards his car. She shoots, and a radius of broken glass appears on the windshield. He screams shrilly and bursts into tears. Six aims the gun at his face again, and he quiets down, letting a stream of snot hit his upper lip.
"Please, please, please," he says. "I'm sorry. God, I'm gonna leave right now. I swear I'm leaving."
Six cocks the hammer again. I see the curtain of the front window move to the right and expose the face of a large blonde woman. I squeeze Six's hand and she squeezes back.
"I'm leaving right now! I'm leaving! I'm leaving!"
The man sputters to the gun. Six aims at his car again and empties the chamber with a loud bang. The rear driver's side window explodes into 1,000 pieces.
"No! Okay! Okay!"
the man shouts. There's suddenly a wet spot on the inner thigh of his jeans. Six motions the gun at the front window, and he makes eye contact with a blonde woman inside.
"And I'll never come back. I'll never, ever, ever come back."
The gun bobs to the left twice, indicating he can leave. The man rips his car door open and dives in. Stones spit out from under his tires as he reverses out of the driveway and then barrels down the road. The woman in the window continues to stare at the handgun that's floating next to her front door. And that's when Six flings it over the house with such force that it's sure to land in the next county. We run back to the road, and then we continue to run until there isn't a house in sight. I wish I could see Six's face.
I could do that kind of stuff all day, she finally says. It's like being a superhero.
Humans do love their superheroes, I say.
Do you think she'll call the police?
Nah, she's probably going to think it was all a bad dream.
Or the best dream she's ever had, I say. Our talk turns to all the good things we could do for Earth with our legacies, if we weren't busy being hunted or hated. How did you train yourself, anyway? I ask. I can't imagine learning the things I did if it hadn't been for Henri pushing me so much.
What other choice did I have? Either we adapt or we perish. So I adapted. Katerina and I trained for years before we were captured, but obviously never once after my legacies developed. When I finally got out of that cave, I promised myself that her death wasn't going to be in vain, and the only way to do that was to seek revenge. So I picked up where we had left off. It was hard at first, especially on my own, but little by little I began to learn and grow stronger. Besides, I've had more time than you. My legacies came sooner than yours, and I'm older than you.
You know, I say, my 16th birthday, or at least the day I celebrated as my birthday with Henri, was 2 days ago.
John, why didn't you tell us?
She asks, then lets go of my hand and playfully shoves me away, making me instantly visible.
We could have celebrated.
I smile and reach for her, feeling blindly in the dark. She takes my hand and interlocks her fingers in mine, allowing my thumb to rest over hers. The thought of Sarah comes into my head, and I find myself instantly pushing it out. So, what was she like? I ask. Katerina. A moment of silence passes.
Compassionate. She was always helping others. And she was funny. We used to joke and laugh a lot, which probably seems hard to believe seeing how serious I usually am.
I chuckle. I didn't say it, you did.
But hey, no changing the subject. Why didn't you say anything about your birthday?
I don't know. I actually forgot about it until yesterday. And then it just seemed pointless with everything else going on.
It's your birthday, John. It's not pointless. Every birthday any of us are lucky to have is cause for celebration, considering what's hunting us. And anyway, had I known, I might have even taken it easy on you in training.
Yeah, you must feel terrible beating up a guy like that on his birthday, I say, and then nudge her. She nudges me back. Bernie Kosar leaps from the brambles and trots beside us. Several burrs are stuck to his fur like Velcro, and I let go of Six's hand to pluck them all off. We reach the end of the road. Tall grass and a winding river lie ahead of us. We turn around and amble back towards the house. Does it bother you that you never got your chest? I ask after a few minutes of silence.
In a way, I think it fueled me that much more. It was gone. There was nothing I could do about it. So I did what I thought was smart and chose to focus on finding the rest of you. I just wish I could have found number three before they did.
Well, you found me. I can't imagine I would have survived this long if you hadn't. Or Bernie Kosar, for that matter. Or even Sarah. As soon as I say Sarah's name, Six's grip loosens a little. Guilt rises in my chest as we make our way back to the house. I do love Sarah. But it's hard to imagine a life with her when I'm so far away, on the run, with no sense of where the future will take me. The only life I can imagine right now is the one I'm living. The one with Six. We reach the house, and I find myself wishing our walk wasn't over. I try to stall, slowing my steps, hovering at the end of the driveway. You know, I only know you as Six, I say. Did you have a name at one time? Of course I did. But I didn't use it very often. I didn't go to school like you. Well, I did for a little while, but then we decided I was better off staying home.
So? What was your name?
Marin Elizabeth.
Whoa, really?
Why do you sound so surprised?
I don't know. Marin Elizabeth seems kind of dainty and feminine. I think I expected you to have something strong and mythic, like Athena, or maybe Xena. You know, like the warrior princess? Or even Storm. Storm would have suited you perfectly. Six laughs, and the sound of it makes me want to pull her to me. Of course I don't, but I want to. And maybe that's what's most telling.
I'll have you know, I used to be a little girl who once wore ribbons in her hair.
Yeah? What color?
Pink.
I think I'd pay money to see that.
Forget it, you don't have enough.
I'll have you know, I say, mimicking the same playful voice she just used. I have a whole chest of rare gems at my disposal. Just point me in the direction of a pawn shop. She laughs, then says,
I'll keep my eyes open for one.
We continue to stand at the mouth of our driveway, and I look up at the stars and the moon, which is 3/4 full. I listen to the wind and to Six's feet on the gravel as she shifts her weight from one leg to the other. I take a deep breath. I'm really glad we went for that walk, I say.
So am I.
I look where she's standing, wishing she were visible, so I could read her expression. Could you imagine if every night were like this, living your life without having to worry about what or who might be lurking out of sight? Without always having to peer over your shoulder to see if you're being followed. Wouldn't it be amazing to be able to forget just once what's peeking over the horizon?
Of course it'd be nice, she says. And it will be nice when we finally have that luxury.
I hate what we have to do. I hate the situation we're in. I wish it were different. I look for Lorien in the sky and release her hand. She makes herself visible. I grab her by the shoulders and turn her towards me. Six inhales deeply. Just as I duck my head towards hers, an explosion rocks the back of the house. Six and I scream and tumble to the ground. A plume of fire lifts up over the roof, and flames instantly spread inside. Sam! I yell. From 50 feet away, I rip the front windows out. They shatter against the concrete walkway. Smoke comes billowing out. Before I know it, I've burst into a dead sprint. I take a deep breath and leap, crashing into the house and splintering the door from its hinges.
Chapter 15. Each night lately, I lie awake for hours, my eyes open. Ears attuned to the sounds of silence around me. Every so often, I lift my head when I hear a distant noise, a drop of water hitting the floor, a person shifting in her sleep, and sometimes I crawl from bed and go to the window to be assured there's nothing out there, an obvious attempt to feel some semblance of security, however flimsy it might be. Each night passes with less sleep than the night before. I've grown weak, exhausted to the point of delirium. I have trouble eating. I know worrying doesn't do me any good, but no amount of willing myself to rest or eat does anything to change how I feel. And when I finally do sleep, nothing keeps away the terrible dreams that wake me up again. There's been no sign of the mustached man in the week since I saw him in the cafe, but I can't dismiss the notion that just because I haven't seen him doesn't mean he isn't out there. I keep returning to the same questions. Who was in my cave? Who or what was the mustached man in the cafe? Why was he reading a book with the name Pittacus on the cover? And most importantly, Why did he let me go if he's Mogadorian? None of it makes sense. Not even the title of his book. I've turned up nothing other than a brief summary of the plot online. A Greek general, given to short pithy statements, defeats an Athenian army when they were on the verge of attacking the city of Mytilene. What does it have to do with anything? The questions of the cave and book aside, I've come to two conclusions. The first is that nothing was done to me because of my number. For the time being, it's keeping me safe. But for how long? The second is that the crowd of people in the cafe kept the Mogadorian from making a move. But from what I know of them, a Mogadorian wouldn't let a few witnesses deter him. I've stopped rushing to and from school ahead of the others, and have instead attached myself to their large group. To keep Ella safe, I've stopped walking with her in public. I know it hurts her feelings, but it's for the best. She doesn't deserve to be mixed up in my problems. But there's one thing that has given me a shade of hope in all this. A noticeable change has occurred in Adelina. Worry creases her forehead. There's a nervous twitch to her eyes when she thinks nobody's watching, and they dart from one section of a room to another, like a scared, threatened animal. The same way they used to years ago, when she still believed. And while we haven't spoken since I fell into her arms after rushing from the cafe, it's these changes in her that have me thinking I might have my Saipan back. Darkness. Silence. 15 sleeping bodies. I lift my head and glance across the room. Instead of seeing a small lump in Ella's bed, the covers are thrown aside, and her bed is empty. It's the third night in a row I've noticed her missing, and yet I never hear her leave. But I have bigger things to worry about than where she's gone off to. I drop my head on the pillow and glance out the window. A full moon, bright and yellow, hangs just outside. I stare at it for a long time, entranced by the way it hovers there. I take a deep breath and close my eyes. When I reopen them, the moon has turned from bright yellow to blood red, and it seems to shimmer. But then I realize it's not the moon I'm staring at, but rather its reflection, shining brightly in the dark waters of some great pool. Steam rises off its surface, and the air reeks of pungent iron. I lift my head again, and only then do I see him standing amid a ravaged, bloodied battlefield. Bodies are strewn everywhere, the dead and dying, the aftermath of some war in which there are no survivors. I instinctively bring my hands to my body, feeling for puncture wounds or cuts. But I'm unscathed. That's when I see her. The girl with the gray eyes I've dreamed about. The one I painted on the cave's wall beside John Smith. She lies motionless at the base of the shore. I rush to her. Blood gushes from her side and soaks into the sand and is carried out to sea. Her raven hair clings to her ashen face. She's not breathing, and I'm completely and utterly anguished to know there's not a single thing I can do about it. And then behind me comes a deep, mocking laugh. My eyes close before I slowly turn around to face my enemy. My eyes open, and the battlefield disappears. The familiar bed in the darkened room has returned. The moon is normal and bright yellow. I get up and walk to the window. I scan the dark terrain, still and quiet. No sign of the mustached man, or anything else for that matter. All the snow has melted, and the moon glistens on the wet cobblestones. Is he watching me? I turn away and crawl back into bed. I lie on my back, taking deep breaths to calm myself. My whole body is tense and rigid. I think about the cave and how I haven't been back since the boot prints appeared. I roll to my side with my back towards the window. I don't want to see what's out there. Ella still isn't in her bed. I try to wait up for her to return, but I fall asleep. No further dreams come. When the morning bell rings, I raise my head off the pillow, my body stiff and sore. A cold rain beats against